Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my direct blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I usually try to upload something to it once a week, once every other week. I promised you guys it'd be weekly, so I did one last week, and here goes one for today, to make sure this week is covered. I'm going to be a man of my word, try to go straight through March and not miss one week. So, the other way, and probably the most efficient way to get my podcast is to go to iTunes and enter Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine, or enter Lord Gaul, which was my username back when I fell in love with the sport. I was on Kakatugi, K1 USA, K1 Fans. That was kind of what really molded the, kickfighting podcast show. Just a guy who fell in love with the sport, wanted to listen to a podcast about kickboxing, didn't have one. Now, all of a sudden, we have several. but thank you for those who've been listening and following me for these, it's 2017 now, so I've been doing this for about almost 8 years, I guess. So thank you so much if you've been following. I'll continue to do my best. Also, thank you for all the kind words about the 2017 year in kickfighting highlight. I really put a lot of work into them. I love them. I love the sport, and I love to do it. I love to revisit the KOs and the big moments and so on. So thank you for everybody who gave me, who retweeted, gave me kind comments. I really do appreciate it. So thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and go into the glory card, and then I'm going to do my Muay Thai episode that I've been promising. I've been trying to get a guest on, and I asked a couple people, and one guy I really like a lot. He just wasn't, felt like he didn't do it enough. And James, he felt like he didn't do had enough knowledge of it. Just kind of more of a guy who follows it and posts information here and there. And then I was looking for Rob Cox to be on Twitter, but I hadn't seen him as much lately. So I'll still get him on down the road. But because we've got one more weekend, we might not even have the opportunity to have this podcast on. I want to make sure that I do my best to get this out there. So go ahead and jump right into the kickfighting podcast, kickfighting action. I will start off with the glory card and go right into the Muay Thai. Glory 7 LA went down. Some controversy at the top of the card. I'll go ahead and work my way from the bottom up, and then we'll get to Jason Wilderness's decision victory over Israel Adesanya, which, of course, was a big topic of conversation. So let's get it started. First of all, Giga Chikadze gets a big-time KO over Victor Pinto. The Pinto brothers are now getting opportunities to fight in glory. For those of you guys who don't know, Pinto brothers had a lot of success in Thailand because the girls loved them. They were good-looking guys, and they had a good image about them. And both of them, I follow one of them on Instagram, and has pretty Thai girlfriend, and they've got the language down. They've been there for a while. Fought Muay Thai all the time. Fought for Thai fight several times. He gets an opportunity to fight Giga Chikadze. Giga Chikadze, experienced, kickboxer who fought at a higher weight than this. Giga comes out blasting away with his big-time liver kick, and he lets that left leg go. When he scored this one on Victor Pinto, it just echoed. It's one of the meanest liver kicks I think I've ever seen. It was bad. And Pinto went down, and he was literally, when you hear somebody voicing agony over a shot, that shot landed good. So definitely shout out to Giga Chikadze, who afterwards got on the mic to the best of his ability. He's Georgian. Started saying, hey, give me a fight opportunity. I think that I'm the title holder now that there is no official title holder. I haven't mentioned it yet in the show, but Robin Van Roosmalen missed weight by 0.6 or 0.8 pounds. And unfortunate, but he missed weight, and he was stripped of the title, so nobody had the title. So Giga went out and made his claim for, I should have the title. At minimum, Giga should have the opportunity to fight Robin Van Roosmalen later in the year for the title. Next fight on the card was Zoila Frosto versus Daniela Graf. And this is interesting because online, a lot of people didn't see how I saw it. I thought maybe one or two other people on my Twitter wall, saw it as an entertaining fight that had more fight than technique. But I felt like last year's tournament for Glory was really a letdown in a couple ways. Number one, they had lost a lot of fighters due to injury. They lost Iman Barlow due to contract situation and her infusion tie-ups. We still had Tiffany Von Soest, but outside, and Tiffany Von Soest's main fight opponent was dropped, and she got a fighter to pop in on 1 week's notice. I think that happened of the eight girls in the first round. I want to say there were maybe three or four that were replacements, and it's just, it kind of just kind of fell apart at the seams. There were a couple of good technical performances, but all in all, there was no memorable moments. So when Frosto went out there with Daniela Graf and they just started to let it go, I really thought that that was what was needed. Clearly, Daniela Graf, I mean, she was at, there was a point where she was just kind of pushing punches, but she was giving volume, but she was trying. And Zoila Frosto, she would look for her power shots and moments, but the other thing, the biggest thing is both girls gave great effort. So Zoila Frosto came in and she had, my apologies, folks, I had a slight glitch. I had to stop. An alarm went off in my house in the background, so I just wanted to make sure that that didn't get on the podcast. It may have, but my apologies. But anyways, I thought that round one went to Daniela Graf, who kind of had the pressure, who landed a lot of offense. Zoila Frosto, she switched stances. She had a big left leg kick to the body, but she didn't throw it as consistent in round one. And two and three, she definitely made a commitment to sit on her power a lot more. And I think Daniela Graf at that period of time was just pushing punches and trying to give effort and trying to give volume, but she just didn't have any pop behind it. Whereas Frosto, she didn't throw volume as much she'd have like periods of time where there was inactivity, but when she threw, you knew it. Like there was some pop on all of her shots. So when they went to the cards and it went in Zoila Frosto's direction, I, as a fan, thought that that was really good for the sport. I thought it was good for the women's game because so far it's been kind of forgettable, you know, with the women's. And this is, I feel like I put the most time of probably anybody on the planet into women's Muay Thai and kickboxing as far as studying, making sure I get them in the highlights, making sure I get their fights in, making sure I talk them on the podcast. I put a lot of time into it. So when I see or when I say the sentence that last year was a good showcase but not a good didn't really show up as far as the best of the women could offer, I don't do that to be like demeaning or putting anything down. I just want people to know that I've seen some great, awesome female fights, and that last year didn't produce, the Glory Tournament didn't produce any of them. So this at least gave me the effort of, we're trying to put on a show, we're trying to go after each other, we're going for the win. We were not so tactical that we're not doing anything. So shout out to Zoila Frosto, good victory there. Warren Thompson gets a victory in his debut at the the middleweight division, and he gets victory over Mike Lemaire. I thought that this was going to be a pretty clear cut for Lemaire. I thought he'd come out, win with low kicks, but Warren Thompson just he loaded up and wasn't necessarily the most technical performance, but he found his moment to throw big shots, and he was able to score it down in the fight. And he wobbled Lemaire several other times. I think it's just Thompson continued to commit to, I'm going to throw big shots. And Lemaire's always been a weird guy defensively. Like, I've never really felt like he's used a effective guard or usually, like, you know, block and then throw. Or he usually kind of leans out of the way. He's kind of, like, top heavy. He's got a weird kind of movement about him. But he's usually pretty consistent with his low kicks, and he can find his offense here and there. And he can pop. He's got decent pop for the division. He punches okay. But Warren Thompson just seemed like, since I'm at a lower weight class, I'm just going to let it go and treat these guys as if they can't hurt me, and it worked out in his favor. Warren Thompson had not had a win in Glory in my memory, and I think I'm right. I think it was his first win in Glory, and he kept getting opportunities. So I like that he stayed with it, and I like that they stayed with him. Now, again, he's still going to need some fights outside of Glory to sharpen himself up so he can catch up down the road, but as of now, Warren Thompson, you know, going against the Dustin Jacoby isn't out of the question, because they're both going to kind of throw. You know, they're going to throw and technique and being technical is possible. I think more than anything, they're just going to let their hands go. So Thompson Lemaire wasn't the best technical fight you're ever going to see, but it is cool to see somebody who's been getting those opportunities in Glory, and they've, you know, been losing and getting stopped in a lot of cases. For him to turn around and get a big win here, shout out to him. Jonathan Denise gets a victory over Tomas Mosny, and I thought Mosny was going to get the victory here. Deniz, way more experience, way more elite level names on his resume. A guy who's been doing this for a long time, who's fought, for a lot of the major organizations in the world. The only reason why I went against him is because I kind of saw both guys going in different directions. I thought Deniz was going to settle in as a middle-of-the-pack guy, gatekeeper-esque type guy. who's getting a glory opportunity because, you know, of course, people talk about the Nikki Hemmers GM connection and how a lot of those guys get the opportunities to fight in the glory cards. But Tomas Mosny is also a prospect that I think could be something down the road long, and I've got no problem with him losing this fight. This is kickboxing. We grow, we get better. We compete all the time, and there's going to be some losses here and there. And I thought Mosny did a good job and had a really good year, you know, last year, and I thought he was going to get the win here, but he just didn't have the answer for the defense. He's able to score his offense fine. Low kicks, keep his distance at times, land with some punches, but just after, you know, what was it? I want to say with, like, very kind of at the very end of round one, Denise just kind of kept stalking, you know, almost Tyson-esque until he found the big shot and he landed a big right hand over the top that scored it down. After that, you know, it just, I felt like it was the power shots of Denise. Whenever he got in close, he would just throw hands. And Mosny would continue to try to go back, play with low kicks and so on, whatever. But he wasn't doing any of the kind of offense that wins the crowd. Because if you're going to have a low kick game, it's you got to have the results of your work show up at some period of time. And that was the problem with Mosny. He scored clean, but he wasn't able to slow Denise down. People never saw him shaking the leg or so on. Like, you could hear the kicks, you could hear the effects of them, but it just never stopped Denise. So people just kind of, you know, judges can kind of disregard it and go for the guy throwing the heat. So Jonathan Denise gets a victory here, moves forward. A lot of good options for him down the road. Hezzy Hegas is a fighter, wouldn't mind seeing with him. And Tomas Mosny's fine. You just keep staying, keep being active. You'll probably end up in one of the heavyweight tournaments down the road, both of you guys. So just keep staying with it, and we'll see what comes from it. Robin van Roosmalen stops Matt Embry in round four. I think Embry probably committed to looking for his big shot a little bit too much, and he was looking for moments to find counters here and there, and he was, and I think he was catching Roosmalen clean. But I think that even from the first round, and I gave all the rounds to Robin van Roosmalen, but people could go to, I have no problem if somebody thought Embry won round one. Robin van Roosmalen is such an entertaining, steady kickboxer. Just the way that he just rips to the body and drops the low kicks, rips to the body, drops the body kick in the end, then back to combos, back to the low kicks. Tight guard, walks you down, pressure. Just the body commitment, of course, we always love. But just the combos and flurry shows your confidence in your offense. To throw it with heat throughout the whole round is just huge, you know. And Matt Embry just, he continued to slow as it went on, and he continued to look for a shot, and it just wasn't there. Embry took a, you know, I want to say he, after he was tired, he took a pretty good shot to the body, and it slowed Embry down, and he put a barrage afterwards, but it looked like Embry was, like, defeated, and McCarthy came in and called it off, and there wasn't a really, you know, Embry didn't battle it, didn't argue it. I think that he, you know, he gave up, he gave his effort that he was going to give, and then he just didn't have anything left in the gas tank after all the body work from Robin van Roosmalen. So I think if Embry had another opportunity, he'd probably sit down, focus more on consistent scores and kickboxing, and maybe hit his power shots and move a little bit more. But Robin was determined to get him out of there round three, round four, the pressure, figuring the pressure was going to get him. Pressure breaks pipes, as they say. And I thought Robin van Roosmalen put on a great performance. It's the kind of stuff that if you introduce somebody to kickboxing, you say, watch this guy. Robin van Roosmalen reflects our sport at a really high level. Now, again, he's still flirting with MMA here and there and, you know, let him do his thing. Like, he sees the notoriety and money that those guys are getting. But as long as he's still proclaiming himself to be the pound-for-pound best fighter in glory, as long as they're using him 3-4 times a year, he is must-see TV. I really, really enjoy this guy. We move into the main card. Johan Kangulo gets a victory over Konstantin Kuzin. And this fight, I guess you can call it, you know, close. It was a clear decision for me as far as the complete work with Johan Kangulo. Even though Kuzin had moments with his knees and you know, he landed a straight right hand at the end of the third that got him up on the cards. That should have been called a down. But it wasn't, and that allowed Johan Kangulo to take it. It could have, you know, easily gone to a draw after that because, of course, that would have been a 10-8 round to neutralize the two nines that Kangulo had done earlier. So Kangulo moves on after that. Kareem Ben-Mansour gets a victory over Alan Shinsen. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. And Ben Mansour gets a split decision victory. I just think he you know, really attacked the back rear leg, and he just scores, and he's a tricky guy, and he moves weird. But in the end, it's just, it can be entertaining at times, and sometimes you're like, all right, I need more from both of you guys. And that's kind of what happened. In the second round, I think really kind of made people wonder when the end of the fight was kind of coming, that kind of deal. Really got inactive, but Karim Ben Mansour moves on. He then meets Kangulo, and final Kangulo stops him in the third round, where he lands a body shot to overhand right for, you know, comboed for a KO in that round. Karim Ben Mansour is, he's making the most of his opportunities. He's a mover. He's kind of a tricky guy. He scores in weird angles. He's not really there to get hit, whereas Kangulo keeps that power going, pressure, Dutch style, you know, as far as his big-time combos, looks for low kicks on the end, but more than anything, he wants to throw hands. He was able to score the big KO here, and I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch between him and our glory champion, Cedric Dumbe. Wouldn't mind seeing, you know, him against Arthur Greenhardt again. I mean, any of those matchups work for me. I also like the idea of them bringing in other welterweight fighters out there, but Yoha Kagulo is very, very good fighter, and I'm down with him fighting anybody. Guto Inocente gets a victory over D'Angelo Marshall. And I've said this before, I am not the biggest fan of Guto Inocente because I don't feel that there is a steady flow of kickboxing that comes from him. I think that the spinning techniques and stuff that he does all the time, I think that that kind of affects his ability to find rhythm, but it does a good job of kind of like hiding what's really happening, you know, in the fight from the judges, you know, like just those tricks here and there, and makes people realize that, oh, he's doing something interesting. And Marshall was coming after him, you know, in the beginning. Like, if you take away Marshall running into that shot, and you can't take it away because it was a down, I thought Marshall did a good job with pressure and throwing hands. Not a beautiful fight. Not aesthetically beautiful at all. But Guto Inocente kept ducking and trying, you know, coming up under his arm and going into clinch, just kind of buying moments because Marshall was throwing at him. And then as soon as they get in space, Guto is, like, spinning all over the place, spinning back fist, spinning hook kick, jump kick, just doing stuff, you know. And it just never looked fluid to me and never looked like it connected. But he scored a big down in round two. That took it to an extra. And I did think early in round two, Inocente did more work than Angelo did towards the end, because I thought D'Angelo did throw some pretty good offense in the last minute, but I thought that he had gotten himself too far behind in the hole. So Inocente getting the win, or Inocente, however you want to pronounce it. I thought that he gets another win. He continues to get wins in these single fight opportunity spots, but man, I feel like he is regressing from the guy who I watched on film before he fought DeMario Dennis. The DeMario Dennis, that kick landing kind of, you know, took from what could have been. It was an awesome kick, one of the better KOs of the year. But it took from what could have been a good time for him to come in and play with his actual kickboxing offense, which is pretty good. But instead, he, you know, figured out now it's time to play tricks for the rest of the time. And that's kind of what he does out there. So I'd like for him to slow it down, play with some consistent strong punches, drop a low kick on the end. I'm fine with heavyweight, you know, flurries for shots, but blend it. Put some body shots in there. Doesn't always have to be headhunting. I just think Guto Inocente needs more. But they're moving him. They keep giving him these slots. Go ahead and get him in a four-man tournament. See what happens from him. Last fight we're going to talk about on this card, of course. Jason Wilnes defeats Israel Adesanya. This is something that a lot of people were really, really upset about. So I revisited the fight again before I did the podcast. First of all, I think part of the uproar is the culture of kickboxing and wanting to see the next new thing. I'm not saying that Israel Adesanya doesn't have an argument for winning and didn't win. You know, I could definitely could see him winning 3 of 2. That's kind of how I was seeing it. But I could definitely see Wilnes winning 3 of 2 as well. I thought that some of them were close. But when I hear that much uproar, I think we leave being, you know, spectator judges, and we move into this, you know, the guy we wanted to win didn't win. And that's something that happens in all of combat sports. Primarily, it happens a lot in I'd say MMA the most, kickboxing the second, and boxing after that. There's this idea that the one you wanted to win look like they did enough to win. So when they don't win, their outcry is robbery. Adesanya afterwards talked about, you know, look at my face. Didn't get hit. Adesanya got hit in the face, all right? So for people who are acting like he did get hit, he definitely got hit, all right? It's just, I felt like the culture of kickboxing wanted to see this special young prospect get the title that night. Well, you guys forget this is kickboxing. He could still get that title before the year's over. You know, the opportunities are there. He's that kind of a talented athlete. He's not going anywhere. Now, if you felt like he won, I mean, hey, I'm with you. You know, I don't in any way look at what Jason Wellness was doing, in particular in rounds three and four. Three and four, I think, was one of the better rounds for – three in particular is one of the better rounds for Wellness. I can see how Adesanya may have jumped up one and two, and then I could see Wellness doing good three for sure, and then four. And that last round had moments for both guys. But I had it 3-2 for Adesanya, but I didn't see it as Wellness didn't have a chance. Now, one of the cards was 49-46. That was a little bit tougher for me because I did think that Israel Adesanya had 2 rounds in my mind. So that would kill that kind of a stretch. I don't remember clearly or close that Wellness took 4 rounds. But for people to say that Wellness didn't deserve it or that they favored the Dutch style over what Israel Adesanya's work, I think you guys should just slow it down and just rewatch the fight and don't say, hey, who do I think won? Just rewatch the fight and say, hey, can an argument be made for Jason Wellness winning this fight? And I definitely think that there is. You know, I definitely think there is. And this is a guy who had Adesanya winning. I just didn't see, round 5 as just super over the top clear for Adesanya, you know, on that when I watched it, you know. So, I think he'll be fine. Adesanya will probably win another tournament and be right back in it. Jason Wellness, of course, is, you know, champ, probably going to end up fighting Simon Marcus for, you know, again. And then we'll get Adesanya and Marcus, which could be a lot of fun. But Israel Adesanya is young. He's not going anywhere. He could still end up being the best fighter in the world, you know. It's just, don't think because it didn't happen last week that everything is, you know, the end of the world. This is kickboxing. That stuff happens. He'll bounce back, all right? He will bounce back, people. Should be a lot of fun watching his career progress. I'm excited to see him. And again, I thought he'd won. But I cannot accept any answer that Jason Wellness was just completely out of this fight and shouldn't have won at all. I definitely think that he had, you know, scored in flurry several times, was able to find a left hook, was able to find he returned kick pretty solid for a good, you know, percentage of the fight. I thought that he fought fine, and I thought that there was a chance that he could have, you know, won this fight, and he did. I just thought that Israel Adesanya did more. But I didn't think that there was a wrong answer. And that's where I think we need to get away from feeling that if it's almost like kickboxing fans feel robbed of not having Adesanya win that night. But don't feel that way. That's not our sport. It's never been our sport. Keep competing, and the opportunities are going to come for you to be a champion of the world. And for Adesanya, it could literally come this year. That's how soon it could be. We leave Glory LA, and we're going to go ahead and hop into what I had mentioned before. I'm a big Muay Thai guy, you know, and I've been, you know, following the stadiums and everything for quite some time. My problem at the last 6 months of last year is I didn't do a good job of really getting into the stadium shows like I had put in effort before. And that's why I was a little disappointed in myself. I just got busy. Kickboxing cards, the fights are, you know, short and easy, and the cards are easy to follow, and they get a little bit of push behind them. Whereas with the stadium fights, I got to sit down and do my study and break the fights down and give people kind of something to really, really get a hold of. So my apologies there. I'm going to go ahead, sit down, take you guys on a little bit of a journey, and see if you can remember some of the better moments in Muay Thai last year. First of all, I'm going to start off with, you know, the leader of the ship. Start off with the stadiums, okay? First thing I'm going to mention from the stadiums, we'll go Lumpini Stadium, 2016, Fight of the Year with Prake Pet, as he takes a comeback victory over Dietrich, Sor Pin Papai. Here's my thing with this whole kind of, you know, experience. There's 4 downs in the fight. It starts off with Prake Pet. He gets a, you know, it kind of came off as a flash down to me. But he scores a right hand early, and it drops Dietrich. Dietrich goes down to his butt, but like he faints, gets his footwork, and he drops the two, and Dietrich goes down, and they give Dietrich a count. Dietrich then bounces back in the next round. He scores a down with the uppercut. He scores another down, I can't remember, in a flurry. And then all of a sudden, you know, you could see that Prakipet was definitely hurt. It wasn't like he took a soft down or a flash down like Dietrich took before. He was hurt. He was able to bite down, come back. He landed some, you know, effective offense. He got Dietrich to the ropes and just started throwing in flurries, like looking for the stoppage, looking for the stoppage. All of a sudden, a big score gets him, you know, the KO, and he gets the victory. Usually, the crowd is great on these kind of back and forths. I thought the crowd was okay this time. Solid, but, you know, I've seen more where I just thought that they were just really into every moment. I thought the crowd was okay. Now, again, it could have been the YouTube fight that I found on it. Yep, definitely cool fight. Check that out. I'm going to give this to you. This is the fight of the year, Lumpini Stadium, Prakaipet. And then, of course, you can go gym name, Eminard Air, Eminentair. So, Eminent Air. And then he took on Dietrich Sorpapai. Dietrich Sor, Sor, space, Penprapa. Check that fight out on Muay Thai's has it up. If you go to Muay Thai's on his Facebook page, it's I think it's at the top, but he's got that up, and you could also find it on Muay Thai's if you follow him on YouTube. So definitely check that out. Fighter of the Year was Muang Thai, and of course I profiled him in the year in kickfighting highlight. I always do my best to kind of get that athlete out there because I think it's very, very important. Now, Muang Thai, of course, is coming off two back-to-back losses, you know, recently. He lost to, Rambo, and he lost to, I've got it written down here, Yadpanamrong just recently. So these are this two back-to-back fights where he had losses. With that said, he had an awesome year, and he was getting elbow KOs all over the place. I put up a few in my fight. It's cool when you get guys out there throwing elbows and getting stoppages. That's just awesome stuff. And, of course, you watch the stadiums, you usually see two kinds of victories consistently. The most consistent victories you see is one where a guy is able to dominate the fight dictation. You know, usually in the clinch, they're able to score big shots in the clinch, get dumps and throws and so on. That's one way. The other way is you get guys who win the body kick exchange. And the body kick scores the highest in Thailand because they see it as the most difficult kick. And it's the kick that everybody perfects. And I would say it in terms of this. If you're going to score low kicks in a, you know, Thai-style fight or in a stadium fight, they're only going to give you credit if you hurt the guy. But because they see it as an easier score. They see boxing as an easier score. But they see kicking to the body, a kick that can be caught, a kick that can be checked, a kick that can be returned. If you can land that powerful to the body and move a guy and not have a return, that's a big-time way that a lot of guys win in the stadium. So definitely it's something that leads to just kind of the drama of it. With Muang Thai, he's a little bit different. Anawant, when he was great, he's a little bit different. But those are the main ways that you see a lot of guys win fights. When you see Muang Thai get in there, win with that kind of offense, but really get into positions where he can start cracking elbows and really cutting guys up and scoring downs, it's always awesome to see. And Muang Thai did a great job of getting in there, throwing, I won't say big hands, but you know, throwing good, solid boxing and getting into positions where he can let big-time elbows go. Muang Thai, Muang Thai. Check him out on YouTube. Got some stuff. And, of course, if you saw the year in kickfighting highlight, you'll see Muang Thai get some elbows in there as well. Other guys to pay attention to in the stadium world. I mentioned him as one of my prospects of the year. Guys to watch to carry the stadium moving forward. I am, of course, a big fan of Ging Sung Wek. And now, again, not for everybody. The stadium fights, I think you can enjoy them if you put the time in and you understand it and you get to understand the rhythm of it because it's different than what you'd see in other sports. But GINGSANGLEK, fun fighter, fights in the lower weight classes. I mean, between 108 and like 115, you'll see him kind of really fighting down there. He's going to get bigger and grow up a little bit more, but he's still a teenager. Very, very talented guy. I'm always excited to see him perform. Sangmanee, still doing his thing in the stadiums, S-A-N-G-M-A-N-E-E. Definitely check him out. A lot of good stuff from him. You know, Panpayak, there's a couple of them. Both of them very entertaining. P-A-N-P-A-Y-A-K, definitely check him out. Go to Muay Thai's, most importantly. Muay Thai's, and he's got his own YouTube page. I've mentioned him on this show several times, But literally, it's M-U-A-Y-T-I-E-S. He's also got MuayThais.com. Check him out. But he's got all these guys. Sexton, who, of course, was the man who yields to no one. He is the guy still doing his things in tournaments, still walking people down, still getting into those scraps. He went against Superbank recently. Superbank with the sweeps and the dumps and the throws. Still, we've got so many entertaining, high-level Thai stadium fighters that you want to take your time to check these guys out. Superlek, another one. Go to Muay Thai's, look it up. He's got your fix. He's got all the best stadium fighters in the world. He's doing his best to not just, and he usually just Lumpini and the Raja Stadium, but now I'm starting to notice that he's creeping in some of the other shows in Thailand that aren't necessarily major stadium shows. So shout out to him. Oh, sorry about that, folks. Phone went off. I'm not going to answer it. And it's trying to go to spite me. I do not want your health care. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. That's actually a weird thing. I try to cancel it on my phone and it answered anyways. It's like the man is working through my phone to make me get the government insurance as opposed to buying it from a provider on my own. But anyways, I'm back to talking about people kicking and punching people in the face. Another thing I wanted to bring up of note for the stadiums is, of course, Yusuf I've pronounced his name wrong so many times, I'm going to get it right this time. Yusuf Bohenin is a guy who fought in France several times, but I actually think that he might be based out of Belgium, but I've known him to compete for both. Anyways, he is a very talented guy, and as I double check, I do have him being from Belgium. Very talented guy who fought Bukau back in the day, fought in the stadiums for a while. Last year, at one of the bigger weight classes, he won a stadium title. I believe it's the Raja title in a bigger weight class. So he's a guy who's been in the sport for a while. I didn't like his victory to win that title. What I mean by that is it was a cool KO, but then he went over the top of this celebration. He did like some machine gun thing. He's like over a guy who's already knocked out, and he kind of had this big theatrical thing, and they celebrated. The celebration of them, you know, with him, pulled him away from the guy who's already in the ground. I thought that was a little bogus, but he's a talented guy, and, you know, we've got him, we've got Damian Alamos. Those are two recent forays to win major stadium titles. Of course, Alamos ain't in a fight game anymore, but good stuff for him. Good to have that happen, and it's important because when I was, you know, in Thailand 6 years ago, I'd say it's still a little bit true now, they were in the age of the tourist. And what I mean by that is, even though they had big-time stadium fights, a lot of the gyms in those areas who used to, you know, 15 years ago, would be like, no Westerners, go to another Thai gym. Today, way different. They'll go ahead and they'll accept the Westerner in. They'll train them. The Westerners understand it. They'll spin and kind of have it all. They'll travel and have a bunch of money saved and be out there for like a month, 2 months at a time. Some people half a year. Some people move out there full. But they're going after it full, and they're going against some of the better guys in the world. Yusuf Bohenin, again, not a weight class that the elite ties are in. The bigger the weight you go up, the more rare it is that you'll see elite Thai competitors. Not that they're not still talented, but a lot of those guys have moved on to kickboxing once they see that the weight's up there. You know, Sitichai on to kickboxing, you know, it's just, Akpracha, he does kickboxing sometimes, does Muay Thai other times, but after you get over 141 pounds, there's a lot higher chance for the Westerners to have success. Around 130 pounds, really, really difficult. You know, you get around, you know, I'll use kgs as well. You keep yourself around, 61 kgs. That's kind of a lot tougher for you know, Westerners to have success. But Yusuf was able to get a big stadium win, and that's awesome for him, and I'll see what happens with him moving forward. But you've got a great career for the rest of your life. You do nothing else, Yusuf Bahanan. So good job, and I hope to see you more down the road. Also, if you go to www.siamfighting.com, there is an interview of him, so definitely check it out. Just put in his name, Y-O-U-S-S-E-F, and then Bohannam, B-O-U-G-H-A-N-E-M. Go ahead and Google his name, and you could go stadium champion or just Google his name, whatever, and you'll see that Siam Fight Mag pop up. Siam, S-I-A-M-F-I-G-H-T-M-A-G. That pops right up, and they'll have an interview on there if you guys want to check that out. Going to go ahead and move to what some of the stadium shows are. Some of the Thai shows are full rules Thai show, I should say, that are going on in the West. I'd say right now, one of the two biggest for me are the Akau show and, of course, the Lion Fight shows. Now, again, Lion Fight, top to bottom, does not necessarily have a full high-level international fight crowd, fight card. But the top of the card, the last two fights, usually reflect some of the better fighters in the world. I'll go ahead and start off with Yikao first. Yikao, they've been doing it for a while. And I think the best thing that they've ever done was to move their base from fighting in Italy all the time to fighting in England all the time. Now, I know they're trying to do shows here and there and so on, but I thought it was huge to their brand that they made a commitment to go to England, because I've said it on this show many times, I feel like no one does a better job of supporting combat sports than the United Kingdom. I think they just do a great job, England in particular. So them doing shows is a really big deal. Go ahead and go into some of their stars, of course. You know, Jordan Watson, the Bad Company boys, Jordan Watson, Liam Harrison. The most important fight, maybe one of the most important fights in international Muay Thai, happened last year. It didn't get the recognition that I thought it should have got. But Fabio Pinca's victory over Liam Harrison was a big deal, because they really are, in my opinion, the two best resumes of guys who fought outside of the major stadiums. Or they fought, fighting resume-wise of Westerners, I should say. Fabio Pinca, even though I didn't agree with it, he's got a victory over Sanchai. Liam Harrison's got a victory over Anawat. Both of them dominated their countries. Like, nobody from, England fights Liam Harrison around his weight class. And I say it all the time. It's like, at some period of time, someone's got to step up and try that to get that victory. Fabio Pinca, he successfully beat off, Boba Saka's another one, came up recently. He successfully beats the best guys in his country on a regular basis. And he fights the elite Thais, and he fights kickboxing and boxing. He had a really good year. Last year, he won. And I really should have really considered him for kind of like, if I did two fighters of the years last year, I really thought that he had a good resume. He started off the year winning in Lion Fight over, Malapet, but, that's what I expect. But he started off the year doing that, and then he went from that to he had this Yikao fight. He fought in Glory. He had a good year, not to mention I believe he fought in Les Des Champions. He is a really, really good fighter and a great fighter. This win right here probably cemented him as, in my opinion, and please don't burn me at the stake, but I'm going to say it. I was a huge fan of some of the great French fighters of all. If I bring up Jerome Le Banner, of course, he had his big time success. And then, of course, we had guys like Farid Valoum, Kamel Demel, Samir Muhammad. Like, they really have this great, wonderful history of elite, even Danny Bell, elite fighters. Fabio Pinca, in my opinion, is the best Muay Thai fighter to come out of France. Go ahead, set me on fire. I will accept whatever punishment that comes your way. But my opinion, if I look at his resume, I look at who he's beaten, I look at who he fought, he's got not just this win over Harrison, but he also won the first Thai fight, which was a legit tournament. The first Thai fight was legit. You know, it turned into something different, but it was a legit 16-man tournament. He won, and he had some big-time, you know, big-time performances. Like, it was a memorable scene. And literally, when they used to do that traveling Thai fight team, he was like the only Westerner on the team, you know, going around there. I remember he had one loss, but then he bounced back and had several other wins. But Fabio Pinca, to me, personal opinion, it's just me, he's the best to come out, full rules Muay Thai. Now, again, he has losses, and he ran into Georgia Petrosian in kickboxing. Georgia got him, and he's a good, talented guy, but he wasn't unbeatable. But there's nothing wrong with that. Fabio Pinca, just resume-wise, to me, if you were to say, Steven, who is the first person that you think anybody should really focus on as the best in the history of France? I know all those other names are important. And timing-wise, Danny Bill might mean a lot more to other people. Charles Kowalski might mean a lot more to other people. But in my opinion, Fabio Pinca is the best. So for him to do his thing and get this big-time win over Liam Harrison, that was huge. That was just a huge, huge victory. He did it. And the way they did the contracts is one fight is going to happen in England, the other fight's going to happen in France. So the fact that Fabio Pinca won the fight in England, it goes huge for the second fight happening in France. I love that they put that in the contract, because that was the big worry. Would each other's home base kind of go against the other guy? And shout out for Pinca just for saying, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and be that guy and take that chance. Shout out for Harrison for taking the chance taking the fight on the first place. If there's one thing that Harrison and Watson have done consistently, whoever the best guy in the world is out there, they've gone against him. And Watson with Bukau and just the wealth the level of guys that these guys are competing against on a high level, I just got to give them hats off to them. They go with the best option for themselves. And it might not necessarily mean that they get, you know, some home cooking. You know what I'm saying? That they get a decision that goes their way. They have won rightfully and lost rightfully all the elite guys that they've gone against, in my personal opinion. Furthering up on Jordan Watson, of course, he had the loss in kickboxing to Georgia Petrosian, but he had a victory over Ben Hodge. Of course, he was stopped and then won the title, but that wasn't last year. I'll go ahead and just focus on last year. But last year, Watson continue to do what he does. Consistent victories on Yakao, and it just shows he's got one of the savvier full rules Muay Thai styles to watch, because he's got that body kick. He's got a slyness about him. He's got kind of, you know, that ick factor. He's got the right kind of swag, the right kind of aura. He's much watched TV. Manachai, from Yakao Sanchai Gym, whatever. He had a couple of opportunities to fight for them. He beat Pinakos Yusuf one of his fights. I can't remember who the other fight was off the top of my head. But he's a guy who they bring from the Thai stadiums over to, you know, compete because of the Yakao brand, of course, the clothing brand and fight gear brand. They brought him over. He's had some big-time wins. The development of female fighters, they've got Amy Perny, who had a TKO victory, over against Ludovine Lisnier last year. But the thing I like about it was it developed towards a bigger fight with her and Dakota Chevia, which was announced for later this year. That means that they are not just putting female fights on, but they've had a Dakota fight for them before. They're developing big fights for themselves down the road, and that's important. Like, you can't just have this woman's good against this person. You got to have it set up so that the best fight the best. And you showcase some athletes, and you have those athletes you showcase compete against one another. That's how this game works. That's how this sport grows. So shout out to them for that matchmaking. That really is some wise stuff to put that fight together. I've been a huge Chris Shaw fan for a while. I put him in one of my highlights a few years ago when I first got introduced to him. He had a victory over Jerzy Pinto. He's a guy I think has a really good kickboxing style, even though he fights full rules Muay Thai. So I'd like to see him get out there and fight for a Glory or a, you know, K-1 at some period of time. But as of right now, he put on some pretty good show, and he's got a victory over, you know, one of the Benuis and this brand. And that was kind of the thing that let me know that Shaw could be a little bit more. So good to him. Other guys that they use on a regular basis, Joe Craven, Stephen Long, they use him. they really do have a good core of athletes. Excuse me. I want to see more. I want to see more of them down the road. We move on to Lion Fight. And, oh, man. Please tell me your brother's not getting sick. But I have been traveling a lot, and I haven't been sleeping as much and eating as much, so it could happen. We go to Lion Fight, and Lion Fight is doing its job and really, really promoting the, sorry for the slight glitch in there, folks. Just had to make sure, coughing and stuff, needed to pause for a little bit just to gather myself, and I'm back at it. So, let's talk about Lion Fight, and Lion Fight, as I said before, I feel like they're doing a good job of taking care of their main event and co-main event. Like, those are the main ones where you get that international flavor. You get a reflection of the best fighters in the world. Now, they have a business model that they have to do. Basically, they fill their audience with amateur fights and undercard fights. That's where they fill the crowd with. Now, the next step for them, of course, is to probably get some walkout bouts. That way, they can keep a little bit more of the crowd in there. Because I remember I watched a Glory event where they had the entire undercard was a bunch of local kickboxing fights. I was at Virginia for a fight card last year. And they had a pretty decent crowd. And then the moment the main card started and all those amateur fights ended, people left with the amateur fights. And then the crowd was like, you know, not full at all. Their successful version of that card was when they did the show over the school year, you know, because they're right there by George Mason. And they had a good collection of guys in the amateur card, but people came out and they enjoyed the whole card, and it was really, really full. The business model that Glory tries to accomplish in the U.S. does that. In that way, TIE Fight's very similar. First of all, they go to casinos, you know, who usually cover site fees and that kind of deal, whatever. So they go to this casino and they put on a show, but they need to make their money off of local people coming in. And because not someone, you got to know kickboxing, you got to know Muay Thai to know who Urena Bears is. That's just kind of how it is. Urena Bars, you go in, you watch her perform, you enjoy it. But most people don't go in to see her. They either go in to see the show or they come in for somebody who's on the undercard. So if you ever wonder how some of those undercard fights happen, that's usually what happens. They're in a certain area, they get some amateurs around, they get you to sell tickets. And I remember Christine Toledo was talking about it on Facebook one time. She was like, I don't want to hear that you just want to show up and compete. You know, I need you guys to sell tickets. And a lot of people kind of took that the wrong way, and we were kind of upset that she said that, made that decision. And you know, they think that let me just perform and people will just enjoy the performance. Understand her role. She's a promoter, and she lives off of the money that she gets from purses, from sponsors, from it all. That's how they have a successful business brand. They get notoriety nationally by having the top of the order fight card. So I look at this and I say, all right, I really do believe that they're doing the best they can with their card, and they have successfully put out a pretty decent product because of it. So we look at some of their fighters. The emergence of Regan Ursel last year was really, really cool. You know, the head kick KO that he has over Nadawat is just good stuff. It was just a perfect, you know, step off to the outside high kick. You know, it's just beautiful. One of the best KOs of the year. Good stuff there. Joe Nadawat, as I mentioned before, two-division champion, fights full rules Muay Thai. He came in on short notice and beat Malapet. I think he was replacement for, oh man, I can't remember. It was really, really short notice. It was for an American, but Kai Hallenbach. He came in short notice. He won a title there over Malapet. I thought that he did a good job of keeping himself out there on a regular basis. I thought that them bringing in Amon Barlow was huge because Amon Barlow, of course, is the second best fighter in the world to me. I still have, for those wondering, nothing has changed at the top of my list. Number one at the top of the list, of course, is Anissa Mexen, who fought 8 times last year. And a lot of that was full rules Muay Thai. So shout out to Anissa Mexen, really continuing her reign and having promoters to keep making sure that she has fights. We're in a weird era of fighting because nothing shows that there's more female or more women high level or at least competitive female competitors, nothing shows that or reflects that more than the fact that once upon a time, if there was a Jermaine Durandami out there, people were like, no, keep my fighter away from her. I don't want them to get, you know, what Lucia Riker is going to do to them. I don't want them to have that. I want them to be in fights that they could win, or I don't want them to be in a fight. And now you've got a different era where there's so many women who are training and competing and getting high-level fights, and that's huge. I mean, as I mentioned, Iman Barlow is preparing, you know, this coming up weekend. She's going to be going against Marcel Usla. And Usla is a German fighter who's fought Anissa Mexen. She's fought in Australia against Kaylee Reese. She is a savvy veteran fighter that will go out there and compete with the best in the world, win, lose, or draw. And she hasn't gotten her hands raised in a lot of those elite matchups. She's gotten her hand raised in a lot of the local, you know, in Germany. She's gotten her hand raised in the IFMAs and that kind of deal, whatever. It just hasn't gone her way in those tournaments. With that said, she's still a very, very competent fighter who will go against the elite. And that's not something that we've always had in women's fighting. So Iman Barlow comes in, gets the title, a really good short-notice opponent. But she's reflects the best in the world. And here they've got her going again. She just arrived in Vegas today. I just saw it on Instagram. So shout out to Iman Barlow. Antonina Shevchenko. It's really cool that this and the Awakening website who does female fighting, or Awakening Fighters, I believe it is. They had her as female fighter of the year, or fighter of the year, because they focus on women fighting predominantly. She came in and showed her skill set, really one-sided victory over Italian opponent in the first one. But that one didn't really reflect her skill set the way the Yoma Wymans fight did. Because Yona Wymans, again, one of the better... there wasn't an Ilana Wymans fighter out there before. They didn't have a girl who was really, really talented, who could possibly get an upset here and there, who could possibly get a big fight here and there. She's got that KO pop because Yona Wymans can really dig to the body. She can really score big if you give her opportunities. They didn't have her in the fight game back in the day. They just had elite women, and you lost to one of the elite women or you stopped, you know. And Yona's gone in there, and she goes and she tries to have effective offense. She's going to go into her series of offense. She's going to go into her combo flows, and that worked into Antonina's game because she plays second so well. What I mean by playing second is she can respond to what you're doing in a way that everything you do is a mistake. And it's the worst thing, the worst kind of fighter to be in there with. You get in there with a KO power, at least you know they're trying to kill you. You get in there with somebody who plays second and they're savvy and they've got a good step back game and they can counter everything you do, that just makes it tough. Antonina Shevchenko, whose sister, of course, is, you know, both of them are multiple time world champions, but Antonina's sister fights tonight, as you know, I record this. Valentina fights, you know, in UFC. Antonina's finally got the opportunity for people to see how talented she is. So she had a really good, two big wins, good 2016 for her. And other notables, Rena Barris is no longer with Lion Fight, but she was able to get another victory. I think she got two victories last year. She got a victory over Martina Drodrova, and then the second fight, oh, that girl was undefeated too. I'm just having a mental lapse as I try to remember who she was. It is, oh gosh, hold on, I'm literally going to click on a link because it is driving me crazy that I don't know who this person is.
My name's AJ Agassar. Oh, hey. I've been
Everybody hates commercials. Everybody hates commercials. Anyways, Vienna Bars gets another big time victory. You know, two victories, this time over an undefeated opponent. Whose name eludes me right now. I'm not going to have you guys play through that commercial. I'm just going to go ahead and just say she got two big victories. And I think that it was a... Angela Whitley. That was her name. Angela Whitley, or Whitney. Yeah, it was Whitley. She was the one who came in with a really good fight record. Irina Barnes was able to get the victory there. Fabio Pink, as I mentioned before, fought for Lion Fight earlier in the year. Big time win there. Sergio Wilson comes over for Holland. He was able to, in split decision, defend his title. Not to mention, they're trying to develop their local guys. Bolonas was no longer with the promotion anymore. But, you know, they gave him a good step-up fight in his last fight out. And he wasn't able to get the victory there. But learning experience, that's our game. You know, he's a guy who's got, like, 7-8 pro fights. And he started going against, you know, some ties with a lot of fights. He decided to test himself. He went against a tie. He blew that tie out. He got a victory over that tie fighter. Cards didn't go his way. And then they changed the cards later. So he then gets another opportunity against a tie fighter who was based out of Australia. He got the victory that time. There are some talented guys out there, and they're really doing a good job of pushing their brand. All those fighters that I mentioned are international worthy people. You know, Yurina Barz, Antonina Shevchenko, Regin Ursel, Sergio Wilson, all fighters with a good, you know, history. And not to mention the Bolanos is the guys that they are developing underneath. They're trying to have a perfect blend of main international attractions, steady guys like Romeo Danza, who could fill the middle of that portion card, prospects who they like to develop, like Bolanos, as I mentioned before, and then, of course, the undercard with the amateur series and so on. So they're doing their thing. They really are. And, again, there are other promotions out there. It definitely needs to be said that, you know, as I do this show, there are talented fighters all over the place, and there are talented promotions emerging all over the place. You know, the MTGP, of course, that's had it, several shows, and it had, you know, Amon Barlow on their show. It brought back Damian Trainer. There's a lot of good stuff happening in the Muay Thai world. So that's my show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I apologize for not getting it to you earlier. As I mentioned before, I really was trying to get in a guest. But it didn't happen that way. Decided to do my show solo, as I usually do, and get that to the people. So thank you for listening. Thank you for following. I'll be back next week. God bless. Everybody have a good one. Peace.